While in the emergency department, an EMS call comes in that reports that they're bringing a patient in atrial fibrillation with rapid ventricular response. The patient's heart rate fluctuates from 100 to 140, and when the patient arrives, she reports that she's been feeling a little dizzy and weak for the past few days. You put her on the cardiac monitor, get a 12-lead EKG and vital signs. Blood pressure is stable, but EMS report is confirmed. You show the ED physician the EKG, and he orders 5 milligrams of IV push metoprolol. After giving the metoprolol, the heart rate remains really fast, and the rhythm continues to be irregular with absent P waves. Another order for metoprolol is placed. You give the second dose with, again, little response. And after administering metoprolol to this patient on 3 separate occasions with little desired response, you can't help but think to yourself, this doesn't seem to be working. What else can we do to bring down this patient's heart rate? You pose this question to the ED doc, who ultimately decides to order a new medication, diltiazem. After the order goes in, the doc gives you a heads up to monitor closely for hemodynamic stability. How confident are you in understanding diltiazem? How does it work? When should we give it? When should we not give it? And what should we be on the lookout for after giving it? Having a solid understanding of diltiazem is crucial because it treats some of the most common conditions we see in the hospital. Cardiac dysrhythmias with rapid ventricular rate, think AFib, A-flutter, and SVT. It also treats hypertension and angina. So stick around for this, the last episode in this cardiac medication mini-series about diltiazem. By the end of this episode, you will take a big step toward being a confident, well-researched cardiac nurse. Welcome to the Up My Nursing Game podcast. My name is Annie. I've been a clinical nurse for 8 years, and I am curious. I use this podcast to address common clinical questions, share unique perspectives across the healthcare team, and cover what's missed in nursing school. This podcast has partnered with VCU Health so that listeners may claim continuing education credits for most episodes. Go to vcu.cloud-cme.com or use the link in the show notes. Are you studying for the CCRN? Or the PCCN? These are tough exams. I know, as I recently studied for the PCCN myself. I was luckily able to pass the exam by studying with Nicole Kupchick's online self-paced review courses, as well as her book of practice questions. I can't recommend these resources enough, and if you want to up your nursing career, check out her website, NicoleKupchickConsulting.com, and use the promo code UPMYGAME20 to get 20% off all of her products. Diltiazem, also called Cardizem, is a calcium channel blocker. Remember that calcium plays a crucial role in the contraction process of both cardiac and smooth vascular muscles. So calcium rushes into cells during the depolarization phase of the action potential, leading to muscle contraction. So starting with diltiazem's effect on cardiac muscle, by blocking that influx of calcium during depolarization, diltiazem has a negative inotropic effect, meaning that it decreases the contractility of the heart, but with a very significant chronotropic effect, meaning that it slows the heart rate. Interestingly, the AV node is very sensitive to diltiazem, and because of this, diltiazem can be a great choice for tachyarrhythmias with rapid ventricular rates. So that's diltiazem's effect on cardiac muscle. Returning to its effect on smooth muscles, by blocking the influx of calcium during depolarization into smooth vascular muscles, Diltiazem has the effect of causing smooth muscle relaxation and thus causes arteriovenous dilation and an overall lower systemic vascular resistance. What's also unique about diltiazem is that it is more sensitive. So diltiazem's effect on smooth muscle is really relaxation and dilation. So what's unique about diltiazem is that it is more sensitive to the cardiac muscle as opposed to vascular smooth muscle. And what does that mean? So as opposed to other calcium channel blockers that are used for the express purpose of lowering blood pressure, like amlodipine, diltiazem has a relatively mild antihypertensive effect, which can be handy when you're dealing with a patient whose blood pressure may not be super high in the setting of a tachyarrhythmia. With this in mind, it makes sense that diltiazem is primarily used to treat cardiac dysrhythmias with a rapid ventricular rate. So that's your AFibs, aflutters, and SVTs. And while diltiazem can be prescribed to treat high blood pressure, it typically does not lower blood pressure to the same extent as other calcium channel blockers. Okay, so diltiazem is used for acute rate control, for high blood pressure, but a third indication for diltiazem is for long-term stable angina. I know when we think of angina, we think nitro, and while both medications dilate the coronary arteries, nitro does so very rapidly and is used as more of a PRN, whereas diltiazem has a much slower onset and is longer acting. Now, going back to the patient case at the top of the episode, it's worth noting that there are multiple methods for acute rate control of AFib or aflutter with RVR. For patients without evidence of heart failure or LV dysfunction, your usual suspects here are going to be verapamil, diltiazem, and cardioselective beta blockers such as esmolol, and in this case, metoprolol. I don't know about you, but I have found myself in the position of trying to rate control AFib countless times with various medications. I've always kind of wondered, what does the evidence show works best? Researching this episode has been the perfect excuse for me to dive into the data, so let me share one of the very telling studies that I found. Now, the American Journal of Emergency Medicine has performed multiple studies that evaluated patients who presented with atrial fibrillation with RVR, defined as atrial fibrillation with a heart rate over 120, who were treated with metoprolol or diltiazem in the emergency department. And the results showed that diltiazem showed greater efficacy after 30 minutes and 60 minutes of administration compared to metoprolol. After the 90 to 120 minute mark, there was not a huge significant difference found. And these studies really demonstrated that diltiazem's onset time was shorter than metoprolol. Overall, diltiazem proves to be more effective with a quicker onset at controlling the ventricular rate for patients with atrial fibrillation with RVR when compared to metoprolol. Overall, beta blockers and calcium channel blockers like diltiazem are shown to be both effective with rate control. However, research shows that diltiazem will control the rate in AFib with RVR quicker when compared to beta blockers. As a side note, let me know if you'd like me to do an episode dedicated to acute rate control of AFib, aflutter. Like I said, it's a fairly common situation in the hospital. Okay, so what does diltiazem administration look like? Starting with the indication of acute rate control of AFib, aflutter, and SVT, diltiazem is administered as a bolus, followed by a continuous infusion. I'm not going to go over, the numbers for all the dosing here, but I'm going to just try to paint a picture for what this administration looks like. So the initial bolus of diltiazem is given over 2 minutes instead of, just a rapid push dose. And this is to avoid hypotension. A second bolus can be given if the first is ineffective. After the bolus or boluses, diltiazem infusion will commonly be ordered to maintain a goal heart rate or blood pressure. And because titration is, you know, fairly minimal here, diltiazem trips can be given on telemetry or step-down units if the patient is stable and has no other needs for critical care. It's important to note that diltiazem trips should not be given for more than 24 hours due to buildup of the medication, which can cause bradycardia, hypotension, and drug tolerance. So it's not like you're going to set up a diltiazem drip and forget it. As an IV drug, diltiazem is very much a short-term medication. Switching gears to oral diltiazem, this is going to be, you know, a scheduled medication that the patient takes at home. And there's really not much to say here that relates to nursing, except that, you know, dosing will be different for different patients. And the medication will be usually given once daily as an extended release tablet or capsule. Of course, monitor for intended effects, whether it be blood pressure control or chest pain. Now, like all cardiac medications, there are some very important contraindications for diltiazem. And the first is heart failure with a reduced ejection fraction, also called HFrEF, due to the possibility of exacerbation of that heart failure. Diltiazem, like other calcium channel blockers, has a negative inotropic effect, meaning it can reduce the force of myocardial contraction, which is the opposite of what we want in heart failure. So patients with a reduced ejection fraction, where the heart is already weakened and struggling to pump effectively, further reduction in myocardial contraction is met by a decrease in cardiac output, which further exacerbates heart failure symptoms. So it makes sense that you wouldn't want to give a negative inotrope to a patient with reduced ejection fraction. Like many other antiarrhythmic medications, diltiazem is also generally contraindicated for second or third degree heart block. Diltiazem would further block electrical pulses between the SA and AV nodes, causing a higher degree of heart block or, in the worst case, a systole. Now, the side effects of diltiazem are pretty straightforward now that we have the basic understanding of its mechanism of action. We know that diltiazem causes arterial vasodilation, so watch out for hypotension. We know that diltiazem is a negative chronotrope, so watch out for bradycardia. We know that diltiazem blocks electrical impulses, so watch out for heart blocks. And lastly, we know that diltiazem is a negative inotrope, so look out for signs and symptoms of heart failure, like increased peripheral edema. And this should go without saying, but it's worth mentioning, all patients getting IV diltiazem should be on continuous heart monitoring. All right, let's wrap things up here. We learned that by blocking calcium influx during both cardiac and vascular muscle depolarization, diltiazem reduces myocardial contractility, slows the heart rate, and provides mild vasodilation. The key indications for IV diltiazem are for acute rate control of AFib, A-flutter, and some SVTs. And research shows that diltiazem is faster at controlling rapid heart rates, such as an AFib and A-flutter, as compared to beta blockers. PO diltiazem is prescribed for the management of chronic staple angina, hypertension, rhythm control of AFib and A-flutter, and to prevent the recurrence or decrease the severity of SVT. Important contraindications and adverse effects include hypotension, bradycardia, heart block, and heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. Overall, diltiazem is an extremely useful medication for RVR management, and its rapid onset makes it the go-to calcium channel blocker for acute rate control. Because sharing is caring, and I'm just a huge fangirl of free open access medical education, I wanted to share some of the great resources I use to research this episode. Eddie from ICU Advantage on YouTube has a stellar video about diltiazem. He also has episodes about a bunch of other common critical care medications, and ICU Advantage is really just a great resource for visual learners. Also give a shout out to former guest of this podcast, Dr. Eric Strong, who hosts Strong Medicine, also on YouTube. He has an outstanding set of videos about antiarrhythmics. I will share the links for both ICU Advantage and Strong Medicine in the show notes, and this is my personal unpaid endorsement. All right, that's all for today, and that wraps things up for this cardiac medication mini-series. Let me know if you liked it. Please drop me a line by DMing me on Instagram at @upmynursinggame or email me at annie@upmynursinggame.com. Seriously, it means everything to me to hear from you, to learn more about you and how I can serve you best as an educator. I'm just a nerd who doesn't get enough of nursing between shifts. So seriously, hit me up and let's nerd out together. All right, until next time, I hope that you have upped your nursing game.